For the record, my name is John Sergovic with the firm of Sergovic and Carmeen, and I represent the appellant, Rehoboth Mall Limited Partnership. First point I'd like to make is kind of an embarrassing point. We cited Copeland v. Bay 1991 Westlaw 73951 for a proposition as to the scope of review. I realize in reviewing this that decision has been withdrawn, and I apologize to the court for citing a withdrawn decision. The primary reason for bringing this appeal is the precedential value of finding a new lease under an exercise of an option as found by the trial court. That really compelled Rehoboth Mall to appeal the decision, which is contrary to its and my view understanding of Delaware law, which has recognized no distinction between renewals and extensions. Second primary point is that the fair reading of a contract is written was cited by the trial court but not applied by the trial court. The ordinary meaning compels Section 53 of the lease, which provides lessee is not in default at any time during the lease, to mean that the lessee has not at any time during the term committed any default. The fourth point I'd like to raise, which is really in the application of the court's decision, what the Superior Court decision in actuality does, it applies the equivalent of a statute of limitations defense as to the prior defaults by the tenant to the explicit language of the lease, but no such affirmative defense was raised.
Mr. Sergovic, if I followed your earlier comment about the reason that you took this appeal, if the holding in this case were to be that the non-waiver clause only operates to allow Rehoboth to enforce future defaults and can't be used to resurrect enforcement of past defaults, but we indicated in the holding as well that we disagree that the renewal itself created a new contract, would that be an expected outcome from your point of view?
I think it's the it is an expected outcome, because I think the trial court misapplied or really didn't even consider the line of authority that we cited with respect to Delaware's treatment of the renewal extension language, where no distinction has been made.
Well, let me change one word. Instead of expected outcome, would that be a satisfactory outcome from your point of view?
Not totally, Your Honor.
Okay.
Which gets us into the other point of the court's decision. And the other point of the court's decision is the application of the Delaware legal standard in contract interpretation, which is to apply the ordinary meaning to the express language chosen or directed by the contract. In this instance, there are two clauses. One, which is the condition precedent language to the exercise, which is that you cannot be in default at any time during the term. Applying what I believe the interpretation should be of the extension of the term by the exercise, the first, and the attempted exercise by the second, is the term continues. So a default at any time during the term results in the ability of the landlord to say you cannot no longer exercise your options.
I want to make sure I understand the facts, and I'll try to use the terminology that you prefer. The lease started, and there was some non-compliance, some late rent, and some other things. And then the term was extended. And the landlord could have said, prior to the first extension, I'm not going to give you an extension because during this initial period, you've committed these things that were not in compliance, and under the lease, I don't have to give you an extension. But that never happened.
That did not happen. The parties.
Right, so just let me continue to see if I understand it. So then during what I'll call the first extension, as I understand it, everything went well.
There was
no problem.
There were no problems.
Then we get to the second extension. And when the tenant writes in and says, I'd like the second extension, the landlord said, oh, well, you're not going to get the second extension because back during the original term of the lease, we had these problems with non-compliance. And even though I let them go and I gave you the first extension, I'm not giving you the second extension. Are they the facts?
Those are the facts, Your Honor. And the reason the court probably sympathizes with the tenant in the fact pattern, but the language of the contract is really rather unique.
No, I understand that. And I understand the legal issue that you and the Chief Justice were talking about, whether this is a seamless contract or whether you get a fresh start. And the tenant seems to take the position, putting aside the legal terminology, and the Superior Court agreed that after the initial term, although you didn't need to grant the first extension, if you did, you gave the tenant a fresh start.
Well, we don't believe we gave the tenant a fresh start.
I know you don't. I'm trying to say what the Superior Court.
We understand the argument is that because we didn't insist upon our rights at the end of the first term, that would constitute under the language of the contract a waiver, because although the Superior Court pays lip service to the fair reading of the contract, the non-waiver clause, which is at 41, section 41 of the lease, is really rather unique in because it talks not about the language is the failure to insist upon strict performance for the future of any such provision, rule, or option. What the trial court has done, and my learned opponent has done, is they've really tried to redraft that clause so that it reads, a future breach of any such provision, rule, or option. That a future breach is where the trial court gets to go back in time by reading that it has to be a repetitive breach. The language, though, just says It says for the future of any such provision, rule, or option. So if you read that language for the future with the critical paragraph with respect to the condition precedent, you read those together, and it is a seamless expanse of rights and remedies on behalf of the landlord. If you apply Delaware law and Delaware contract interpretation, which says you give the language its meaning, and you don't attempt to engraft upon that meaning something that's not there. And it's our view that the trial court, as did NPC International at page 21 of their answering brief, adds that language to the contract clause. And without adding that language, it is our position that you can't get to the result of the trial court adopted, because again, if you look at the trial court's decision, he doesn't really analyze the language of the contract. He analyzes what the trial court believes should be the operation of a non-waiver clause. And I agree with the trial court that normally, in most contracts that I've seen or written, calls for the, instead of just for the future, it says for a future breach of that obligation requirement.
Well, Justice. Why is this language different in any material respects to the standard language you're referring to? And let me explain what I'm asking more clearly. This paragraph 41, which is the waiver clause, says failure to insist on strict performance shall not be construed as a waiver for the future of any such provision, rule, or option.
And
so you're reading that as saying that if you didn't enforce a provision in the year 2000, you can still come back and rely on that.
Right, because...
Wait, let me finish.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You know,
10 years later, couldn't it just as easily be read to mean that if you not insisted on payments being made on time in the past, prior failure to have strict performance in the past, shall not be a waiver of your right in the future to demand strict performance? So
that's
it. But you're saying that that can't possibly mean that it only applies to future breaches.
I'm saying,
and what I'm asking is, I don't see anything in the language of paragraph 41 that is inconsistent with that kind of an interpretation.
What I'm saying is that in order to get to the interpretation, you're implying that we have the right, or you're stating that we have the right in the future to address a future breach, okay, mm-hmm. which is similar to a breach that occurred in the past.
Right.
But I'm saying that the language of the contract for the future does not apply only to a repetitive breach. The language for the future applies that if you have a past breach, okay,
well,
that triggers...
You're saying that because that's the interpretation that your client prefers, but I'm looking at this language and I'm asking you to tell me what is there in this language or missing from this language that prevents reading it the way I just read it, which is, you know, failure to require strict performance of any provision is not a waiver for the future of requiring strict performance of such a provision.
What I'm saying is your interpretation puts in the language that's missing a, it says for the future, and it says, it doesn't say for a future violation or breach of any such provision, rule, or option. You're reading that in, and I'm saying it's not in the contract. It just says a breach in the past means that if I don't enforce it then, I can still enforce it in the future, and with this option, because again, the option thing ties this property up for 50 years at a rate set in 1984. So the landlord obviously has an economic reason to sit there and say, wait a second, was this such a good deal? And we're sitting there saying, the only way we can protect ourselves is that they have violated the lease. The language is written in such a way that we believe the prior breach can be enforced when we have a right again under the contract.
Mr. Sergovic, let me just follow up on Justice Berger's questions, because you're telling her the same thing that you told her before she asked you the question. And these non-waiver clauses, given the way in which we interpret the literal language of contracts generally, have been interpreted as almost a paragraph of art. For example, in the Viking Pump v.
versus Liberty Mutual case, Vice Chancellor Strawn analyzed non-waiver clauses generally, and the language doesn't differ between many, if not all of them. And he says they serve an important purpose in contract law, and he goes on to say they give a contracting party some assurance that it's fair to require the other party's strict adherence to a contract term during the hectic course of day-to-day business will not result in a complete and unintended loss of its contract rights if it later decides that strict performance is desirable. And he's talking about a later event, not a retroactive change of mind to enforce an event that occurred in the past.
Well, again,
does that mean, here's my question, does that mean that non-waiver provisions in contract law in Delaware have a particular form of interpretation regardless of the literal language of each and every clause in each contract?
Again, that, in my view, that would undermine the case precedent that the courts have uniformly held, that you try to gather the interpretation of the parties to the contract, and it's our provision that the lessor, I don't know who drafted the language, but that language would protect the lessor in a long-term 50-year arrangement.
Well, before you leave, and I understood your economic comment, it seems to be that the landlord entered into a 50-year lease, and as long as there were the original term and renewals, and it was economically advantageous to the landlord, they could overlook things in the past, but to the extent the landlord was having second thoughts on the rent it was getting when it was time for a renewal, it could look back retroactively and say, to the extent there was noncompliance in the past, I'm going to invoke that provision in the lease.
Well, again, under...
But is that what you were
that's
saying?
That's basically what I'm saying, because that rebalances the contracting parties, because otherwise, the landlord is always at the mercy of the tenant. If there is an economic downturn, the tenant can just walk. This way, if there's an economic upturn, there's no more bargaining position.
Okay. You want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
May it please the court, Melissa Rhodes on behalf of MPC International, appellee before you and plaintiff bill in the court below. I respectfully disagree with the contentions of the appellant in this action. I believe that the lower court's decision should be upheld, as the lower court judge properly applied well-established plain language interpretation of the lease, specifically of the no waiver provision in the lease, to the facts of the specific case, and came to a result that the landlord in this case, the appellant, did in fact waive its rights to require strict adherence with the lease terms. And the distinction that has been raised in the briefs before this court of whether this is a lease extension or a lease renewal, I think does not matter in any event to it doesn't have any effect on what will be the outcome of this case, because whether it is a new lease and there's a fresh start or it's a continuation of the same lease, the problem still remains that the appellant waived its rights to enforce the late rents that occurred in 1998. And
well, if it's a new lease, then that's no longer an issue, correct?
Correct.
So you're arguing that we should get to the same result in either event, but it does make a difference in terms of what the rights of the parties are if the original lease term has evaporated and all of what transpired during that time is a nullity and there is now a new contract between the parties versus an extension of an existing contract.
That is correct. I'm glad you asked that question, because I was planning to try to show what the two results would be exactly if each renewal period provided for under Section 53 of the lease constitutes a new lease, then once the first renewal option was exercised in 2000, then and we went through 5 years with no occurrences at all, there was no default. So there would be absolutely no basis for not allowing my client to exercise the second renewal option. But even if you would look at the lease as a continuation and a new lease was not, I'm sorry.
Isn't that what the case law suggests, that it's an extension and not a new lease?
Yes, that is our position. Yes.
So the trial court made a mistake on that one?
Well, I don't believe that the trial court, in reading the decision as a whole, and I believe I tried to address this in our briefs, the trial court to some extent relied on the Seaford Subway case and the fact that the renewal term in our case resulted in I don't believe he actually said new lease. I believe he did cite that case for that proposition, but he goes on to say that basically that the landlord in this case had waived its rights to enforce the old sleeper breaches.
Right, but see, from our perspective, we need to be clear on what legal statements or statements of the law the trial court made, and if those statements need to be tweaked a little bit in order to make sure that our law is consistent, we need to address it. So is it your position that the trial court said that this was a new lease, or that the trial court said that this was an extension? And depending upon what that answer is, does the law support that statement?
Right. I do agree that the trial court judge did determine that it is a new lease. I'm sorry for the confusion. I'm trying to play sort of both positions, because our ultimate argument was relied on the waiver of the landlord. But I believe that the trial court judge properly expanded the case law to encompass the fact that each renewal term in a situation of a commercial lease with a 50-year term such as this, that it is the proper reading to not allow the no waiver provision to be used in such a way that it doesn't require some sort of subsequent event or an event in the future, the way that the appellant argues.
You're still passing over my question.
I'm sorry.
If the trial court said that this was a new lease, was that an acceptable statement of the law in Delaware, or is that new law that we should embrace, or what?
I believe that is actually new law, because I believe it would be expanding the language of the court's decision in Seaford.
Okay. All right, now you can go on to your waiver argument.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Essentially, what the appellant wants to do in this case is use the no waiver provision in a manner such that the landlord's an action occurred, be it a breach, a late rent payment, in 1998 or 2000 of this lease, and then at that time the landlord does not act on its rights pursuant to the lease, waits until the future, and then seeks to go back to the same action, that same late rent, the same breach, and try to enforce it into the future. And it's our position that is not what the no waiver provision in the lease intends to. That's not the plain language interpretation of it, and that's also not how it has been applied in other.
Well, it's not at all unusual for us to hear parties say the plain language of this clause in the contract is X, and hear the other side say no. That very same language that's so plain to them is equally plain to us, but the answer is it means Y. Tell me why their interpretation of the literal words of that clause is incorrect.
If I can read the actual provision to the court. Section 41, no waiver. Failure of the landlord to insist upon strict performance of any provision of this lease or to exercise any option or any rules and regulations herein contained shall not be construed as a waiver for the future of any such provision, rule, or option. I specifically rely on the final portion of that, which is the future of any such provision, rule, or option, meaning that if the landlord at one point accepts late rent and he doesn't act upon his rights at that time, and then in the future there is a late rental payment, the landlord, pursuant to this provision, is not required to accept that late rent.
But isn't there another part of the contract that's really at issue, and that is when it's up for extension, it provides that if you haven't been in compliance during that prior period, that's a basis for the landlord saying, I'm not giving you an extension. And you seem to be saying that if it is one lease, and we're simply talking about extensions, that the first time an extension comes up, if you permit it, then you can't go back when the second extension is operative and say, well, I'm going back beyond the first extension that I granted to non-compliance that preceded it. Even though you're not starting with a fresh start, I was trying to figure out how it related to your waiver argument. So what's your legal position on why, if there's a second extension, but non-compliance in the initial term, the landlord is stopped, precluded, prevented, or whatever, from denying the second extension?
Our legal position on that is that the landlord has waived its rights to enforce the condition precedent in Section 53 with regard to extensions requires that the tenant is not in default, but it is our position that that is exactly what was waived when during the initial lease, that's the period in which the alleged breaches occurred.
So we're talking about a different waiver here. When we're talking about the waiver paragraph that you read in response to the Chief Justice's question, it simply means if you let the rent come in late for a period of time, doesn't preclude you from asking for timely rent in the future. But when we're talking about non-compliance and we get to the extension paragraph, if you have legitimate basis to deny an extension for non-compliance, but you permit it, then you basically are moving forward. And when you get to the second extension, you can't go back to the original term and assert some non-compliance because having permitted the first extension, you've waived your right to complain about any non-compliance in the initial term.
I believe that that's correct.
No, but I mean, that's your position.
Yes, that is my position. And one of the reasons, I think, as a sort of side policy reason would be the purpose of commercial contracts of this nature is to provide some sort of predictability, some sort of stability in the relationship. This is going to go on for a number of years. And the position that the appellant takes, we could be 35 years down the road with all different parties involved here, and they could at that point say, well, the landlord could say, there was late rent in 1998. I'm not going to allow you to exercise the final renewal option.
But Mr. Sirkovic says that's what his client bargained for, and it was their way of looking 35 years down the road and concluding that they made a bad arrangement economically. And now they could capitalize on the initial non-compliance by simply denying an extension. And that you're, to the extent they made a bad bargain with low rent, your client or their predecessors made a bad bargain by having non-compliance never go away.
That does not really make sense to me, that type of argument.
That's not my position. I'm trying to understand what the parties are saying.
I think that basically I don't see how it can be – I don't see how the contract provisions can be read to make it such that the no-waiver provision is drafted to say for the future of any such provision, rule, or option so that the landlord can protect its legal rights down the road if the property is worth more. My reading of – construed as the future for any waiver of such provision, rule, or option necessitates a future occurrence, a future event, something other than going back to 1998 and saying there was late rent 30 years ago. You're obligated for this. I'm going to enforce my rights now. I think that the meaning of future is the plain meaning of future. Unless the court has further questions, I believe I will rest on what is contained in our brief.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don't wish to belabor any points, but I believe the appellee has agreed with our analysis that Judge Graves' decision embarks on a new principle under Delaware law. I don't think that principle is supported by prior Delaware law, and that's what compelled us to bring this appeal. On the waiver language, I simply refer to the appellant's answering brief and the way they stated it. It says, the non-waiver provision, by its very language, is intended for the circumstances where a breach occurs, landlord does not insist, a subsequent breach occurs. It's a subsequent breach of the same thing. That is the way the tenant is reading that clause, and we're saying that no, the clause doesn't implicate the additional breach. It is for the future. Any breach can be applied in the future or for the future, and it's particularly relevant when it comes to the renewal of the option term, is that we can, reading the two clauses together, reach the result that we have the right to deny the tenant the new option term.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll take the case under advisement and recess.